This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the car. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are really tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your siblings, your workmates, heck, even wind down your window and tell someone else stuck in the traffic to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You're on Saturday Magazine with Fiona, Tass and Paul here this morning.
There you go. And our next guest, of course, is Dr. Timothy Jones from La Trobe University. Now, you're a historian, I believe.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, that's really interesting.
That's right. Well, Timothy, you've just completed a new study, which you wrote about in the conversation, which is on the severity of the impacts of conversion practices, more severe than we ever thought before, and the inclusion of mental health, which hadn't been considered in other studies.
Yeah, so people have been researching attempts to change and suppress people's sexuality and gender identity for maybe 100 years, and there have been different trends in that. Mm. Mainstream psychiatry did lots of experiments in the middle of the 20th century, all of which failed. And then from the 70s, religious organisations took up slightly different attempts to change people's identity. Most of the scholarly research after that point was trying to show that attempts to change and suppress people's identity don't work and that they're unethical. But they kind of assumed that those attempts were harmful, but that hadn't really been documented as clearly as we did. And people hadn't really been done research into harm, but also into the recovery processes of survivors, which
this
is also our...
This is groundbreaking research then.
Yeah, we think it's the first research of its kind in the world.
Wow. I'm very surprised that nobody's really looked at and examined the harms that are caused by conversion practices. So tell us about what you found. Tell us about some of those harms.
Yeah, it's pretty grim. The sort of one sentence take home is that attempts to change and suppress your identity can lead to deep, complex trauma that can be long lasting and take a long time to recover, if ever. Maybe it's trauma that you live with for the rest of your life.
Wow. That's pretty serious.
Yeah, it's pretty grave.
That's pretty serious.
Yep.
And are you hoping, for example, that now we have the report, are you planning to, how is that going to be best utilised in the community? I mean, is this something that you can then, that, you know, other states can look at to perhaps bring in the similar legislation that came into Victoria?
Yeah, so one of the other new things about the research that we did is that we looked at all types of attempts to change and suppress people's sexuality and gender identity. Previous research and most of the legislation around the world so far has focused on clinical attempts, so attempts by mental health practitioners to mess with your identity. Mm-hmm. But actually, we know from international research and from the research that we've done so far in Australia is that those clinical attempts are only a minority of the practices that are engaged to attempt to change people's identity. So that's why we use the term LGBT conversion practices, because therapy is misleading, both in that it's not therapeutic, but actually many of the attempts are not actually in the form of therapy, but they're in the form of a whole range of other attempts to change and suppress your identity. And our research showed that those informal attempts, so non-therapeutic attempts, things like prayer, like being coerced into marrying someone of the opposite sex, pop psychology, behavioural practices, flicking a rubber band on your wrist when you have a gay thought, trying to be exorcised of demons, or being spiritually delivered from maligned spiritual sources are all as harmful. Mm. Like, all attempts to tell you that you're sick and broken because you're queer harm you deeply.
Now, Now, Timothy, I'm somebody who's very deeply interested in research, but I'm much more interested in the translation of the research and its translation into practice and change. So what are you going to do with this, and where will you take it next, and what do you hope to achieve from it?
So our research has two main outcomes. We really want to reframe the public debate. We feel like in Australia, talking about religion in the public sphere is quite poor. The level of discourse and religious literacy is quite poor, and the framing of religious freedom, which is dominating, is really unhelpful because it's talking about sort of rights and culture war kinds of things, and really ignoring the impacts on queer people and affected people, both queer people and also communities of faith, because that's one of the things when you look at the practical elements of this, if you look at the effects of these practices and that they're harmful, like religious leaders don't want to be harming their religious community members, and they think they're doing the right thing, but they're not. So we want to change the debate so that people are aware of the
effects. Do you know that, or are you assuming that's the case?
Assuming what's the case, sorry?
That religious leaders don't want to harm people.
Yeah, no. When we speak to them, we're reaching out to people, we're talking to groups, and I had a couple of bishops ask me to talk to their clergy recently in the wake of this report being published and the legislation being passed in Victoria, and they were like, oh, so what are we allowed to do? What's good? How can we help people? The clergy are really, really poorly informed. Some research was published in 2017 that said that gender and sexuality is the area of all the areas of their pastoral practice. That's the area that they're least informed and least confident to support their members. So we want to equip faith communities to better support queer members.
Great.
So so change the debate, help faith leaders to stop these practices and do better in their pastoral care, but also to inform health practitioners to be able to support survivors better in their journeys of recovery.
Wow, I just find all that amazing, actually. It's such a positive approach to what is a really complex and horrible problem, to be honest.
Yeah, it's really, really messy, and most of the current frameworks that we have to approach this aren't very constructive. And if you break it down to the simple, what are the effects of these practices? How can we support people? How can we help people? It's a completely different view.
And are you happy with where Victoria's at from a legislative point of view?
Yeah, I mean, the Victorian legislation is really brilliant in that it both covers formal and informal practices. Most of the legislation around the world, as I said, focuses on clinical practices and not the majority of the practices. So it's comprehensive. There's been a lot of misinformation about the criminal aspects of the bill. The criminal aspects of the bill actually just reflect existing law that if you cause someone injury or serious injury, criminal penalties may apply. So there's no actual big change in the criminal elements of the bill. The really exciting part of the bill is the civil function of the... the bill empowers the Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission to facilitate change in affected communities. And I think that's really, really exciting, the fact that communities which think they're doing the right thing for their queer members might be reported, or it might come to the attention of the commission, and they might go in and say, you know what you're doing is quite harmful. Here are some ways that you could, in ways that are coherent with your faith tradition, support queer people in ways that actually help them and don't harm them.
Do you know what the status might be in other, do you have any insights into other states and where they might be leading with this sort of thing, if they're open to making the new legislation?
Yeah, so Queensland and the ACT have already passed laws banning conversion practices, and numerous other states have got it on their legislative agenda. I'm not a lawyer or a particularly a policy person.
So, no, you're a historian.
A historian and social researcher these days. Like my history has snuck into the present.
I want to go back to the conversation around clergy not feeling, not being informed. And so tell us a bit more about that. How have you unpacked that, and have you learned that? And what can be done about helping clergy to become more informed about potentially the harm that they might be causing onto some of their parishioners?
So that information comes from a report which was published in 2017 into pastoral and counselling practices amongst clergy, and it surveyed clergy around their competencies and confidences in a whole range of areas. And that was just a really striking result, that two-thirds of clergy weren't confident to counsel their religious community members in
that
area.
So this is a survey of clergy right across denominations?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we're hoping to work with communities to support them. I mean, our first priority is what we're currently doing is developing training for mental health practitioners.
Yep.
Because one of the other things that we found, which was both shocking and unsurprising in different ways, was that mental health practitioners in Australia aren't confident in dealing with religion. So there's a horrible, like, twinned problem here. Mm. Clergy aren't confident dealing with gender and sexuality, and psychologists and other mental health practitioners aren't confident dealing with religion.
It's like two ships passing each other in the dark.
Survivors of conversion practices have a lot of shame about their experiences and don't want to talk about it, but they're experiencing all these other problems coming out of their trauma. And so they might present to someone to get help with the surface problems, and because they're too ashamed to talk about their experiences and psychologists are too shy to ask questions about religion, the underlying problem never gets addressed. So that's our first priority, is developing training for mental health practitioners to give them the confidence and knowledge and awareness of the problem so that they can help support survivors recover, because that's really important. But what we're hoping to do once that training is developed and tested and rolled out is to work with different religious communities and to help them improve their practice in a similar way, develop similar training and information resources.
And what's been their reception?
Generally, people have been really, really interested. And I think, interestingly, the legislation passing in Victoria was a bit of a catalyst, because the law means, like, oh, we have to deal with this. I think before that, many religious communities were in denial that it was a problem. Mm. Or they would, like, say, oh, no, we definitely don't support electroshock aversion therapy, not realising that actually all these other things that they were doing, changing and attempting to change and suppress queer people's identity, were conversion practices. So the bill has been a really good had a really good function already in educating communities to rethink, is what we're doing harmful to people? And so I've had a number of meetings with different clergy, just explaining the bill, explaining our research, and just stepping them through, like, oh, can I do this? What should I do if someone asks this? you know, they're almost... I haven't spoken to anybody who has been, like, truly malign and hateful towards queer people.
Look, that's one of the other functions of good legislation, is to act as an education platform to help shift people's attitudes and knowledge. Mm. So even though sometimes it may be difficult to actually police some legislation, it actually does set a set of standards.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
And it helps to frame our discourse and some of our practices and behaviours. So I saw this as being incredibly powerful. Look, just one last question from me, Tim. Why are you interested in this space?
So I've been working around gender and sexuality and religion for almost 20 years.
Wow.
And this is, I was approached about 5-6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago, to start working on this. And it's a project that I kind of fell into. It's something I feel passionately about. And unusually for someone from my, like, disciplinary training, it's a really exciting opportunity.
History.
to be doing work that's having an immediate impact, not just, you know, learning from the past, but making change in the present.
Thank you very much, Tim. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but congratulations on what sounds like really good work. I'm now motivated to find a copy of your report and read it. Where can I find it, by the way?
So it's online on the La Trobe website. If you Google healing spiritual harms, it'll pop up. It's a fairly easy to read 30-page report.
Thank you very much. That was Dr. Timothy Jones, the author of Healing Spiritual Harms from La Trobe University. Look out for his research.
What a fascinating piece of research.
Amazing, amazing. Mm. And how delightful is Dr. Jones? It is Jones, isn't it? Timothy?
Yep.
No, Brad. Jones.
Jones. Yeah, Timothy Jones. And Fiona, there were some references that Tim was talking about.
I have trouble with simple names.
I can tell. With a name like yours, Tass, I'm amazed. Three letters is an easy one to remember. I thought it was a fascinating piece of work. And also that whole piece of religious leaders feeling uncomfortable discussing gender and sexuality, and also, you know, psychiatrists struggling to talk about religion. Right. So real piece of good research.
Very interesting, I thought. Very, very interesting. And, of course, if you want to read more about this, you can jump straight onto The Conversation and look up the piece that's been authored by Timothy Jones.
I'll post the link on our Facebook page.
It's actually a really good piece, because the other interesting insights in this article, of course, are that Farah Thomason, who's an age writer and a fabulous writer and a member of our community, of course, as well, has written about her own personal story and her own personal experience with conversion. And she wrote this back in 2018. It's a fascinating piece to read. So look out for that as well. This is a topic that we have covered from many perspectives and many angles over many, many, many weeks. And it is an important topic, because there is no doubt in my mind that the harms that this has caused on people, as Timothy has now established categorically as a result of scientific research, is unparamounted and can be long life lasting.
But we do need to mention the supporting partners to that research.
Oh, yeah, of course. And who are they again?
The Australian GLBTIQ Multicultural Council.
Oh, AGMCH.
Yes.
I think.
Check you with your acronyms.
La Trobe University, obviously, Macquarie University, the state government.
And I imagine.
The Brave Network.
Brave Network, of course. That's the great work that Nathan Despot's done, who's, of course, been on our show on a few occasions.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.